This is Dialogue Assassination with Research Specialist Mae Bressel. For KLRB, I'm Gloria Barron. Well, Mae, this is Wednesday, and this Friday, you're appearing here tonight, this Friday you'll be on Dick Bragg's program on KIDD, I understand, and that'll be from 7 to 8. So I wanted our listeners to know that it's sort of a continuing thing, I guess, between
the
Dick
third
and
week.
I.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And I know that he has given us credit quite a number of times.
You tell the listeners to turn on KIDD.
I did want them to know that you would be on KIDD on Friday night between 7 and 8, and that's
sort of a question and answer period, isn't it?
Yes, Dick has a program called Hot Seat, and people, he has guests every night from 7 to 8, and this is the third week that I've been invited on, and I hope we can be able to keep this up, because any questions that people have or information they want me to look up, they can talk about on his show. You can write to KLRB or call them, or you can call direct, and I like the direct calls because first of all, there's no preparation involved, and secondly, you can show how vast your research is because you can handle and throw out sources of information to look up. It's working very well.
Right. Now, today we're going to be talking about the Buckley article in last night's paper, the new Sputnik article, and let's see,
Young
Tom Wicker's article.
Well, we're going to take...
And also the Young Americans for Freedom.
That's right. We're going to take the format that we usually use, take the weekly or daily news, and this is what we try to do in this show. We're trying to show everybody who has listened in the past and continues to listen, and the new listeners, that what we're doing is taking the news each week as it comes along and analyzing it and showing how the news pertains to the political assassinations of the past and why the political assassinations are not a dead issue, that they're very much alive. And I would like people to take the program seriously, and I will give you sources of information to look up or books to read. And I want you to believe that something happened in our government in the 60s that started us on the road downhill in every single way that can be mentioned, and that I think I can take each one of these problems and say the cause of it was done by the political assassinations, by the power being usurped violently, and the people not knowing what's happening to themselves. And until they realize what has happened, they cannot halt all the violence or the street revolution or the future assassinations. And I think very seriously we are in a lot of trouble, and I wish people would continue to listen and tell their friends to listen and try to come with a open piece of mind, you know, a clean piece of gray matter, and leave a little room for a new idea as I throw it out. And that's what we're going to talk about, political assassinations every week. Last night's paper in the Monterey Herald, many of you people can get that right now, still in your homes around the kitchen or by the side of the furniture, and you can look up an article which you probably missed. I think a lot of people do not know how to read the paper yet or what they're reading. The information that I get, a lot of my research, is in the paper, and people do not appreciate that they could have that same information, and I want to interpret it for you, if I may. William Buckley has an article called Interview with Chew and Lie. And as a researcher in the Kennedy assassination, this is one of the most important articles, politically, historically, that I have had in 7 years. It begins to say, in quotes, in Latin America, particularly in Chile and Mexico, the rage is an interview that has just been published by a Mexican journalist between Julia Garcia and Chu Enlai. The editor-manager of the Excelsior, published in Mexico City, had spent 2.5 hours with Chu. It is a rich and long interview, full of interesting bits and pieces. Chu tells us, for instance, that the truth of the assassination of President Kennedy has not yet been revealed, end quotes. Now, that coming out in the news media is terribly important, because I've been bringing in to the radio and reading sections for the last 3 weeks from a magazine called Sputnik that's published in the Soviet Union, and I brought with me a copy, August 1971, today. Now, the Western nations, our allies, Germany, France, Italy, Great Britain, none of the nations ever accepted the truth that John Kennedy was killed by Lee Harvey Oswald. They were told not to discuss it. They were threatened. They were threatened the foreign aid would be cut off. We put every pressure on them not to discuss the assassinations in this country. The Soviet Union knew that Oswald was an agent of the CIA while he was there for 2 years. They said it publicly at the time of the assassination, but they've been very, very quiet for 7 years. China has intelligence agents all over the world, certainly working with the Russians, certainly knowing what happened. But for the first time in 7 years, China is talking about the assassination of John Kennedy. Now, what is making the Soviet nation, Soviet Union, talk about this? Why is China talking about it? We are coming to a very important point historically. In 1972, in the United States of America, the government was overthrown, in my opinion, in 1963. But the pretending of having an election in 72 and going through the motions, we will nominate men like Richard Nixon, who was nominated before and won, and we will put in people who were knowledgeable or could expose the assassination. So they weren't on the planning, John Connally and Richard Nixon, they could expose the truth. Spiro Agnew came in on the death of Martin Luther King. He worked closely with Robert Lally of the FBI. He was put in by the Pappas Foundation, who told Richard Nixon to take him as vice president. If he wanted to run and have money for running the campaign, he would take Agnew. The Pappas Foundation overthrew a democracy in Greece. We have spent lives, American lives, dollars, millions, billions of dollars going down the drain. We have done everything wrong in the last year since 1960 when President Kennedy was elected. He was not a saint. He was not perfect. But when the government was overthrown, we put so much money into arms and wasted our money, wasted our talent and our energy. Now we're coming to the point in 1972 that the Soviet Union and Chu Enlai know that we would be in very serious trouble if this team got into election again. Now, Gloria, we remember the very first program we talked about the Pentagon Papers, and I said the American government had one more thing to swallow besides the really hidden reasons why we went into Vietnam, the truth of the Kennedy murders and Martin Luther King and other political assassinations. Remember, I said this is the one thing we have to grow up and take.
Yes, you did say that on the first.
It was in June when we made our first tape, and this is the 13th of a series, and I was emphatic, and I said this is what we have to take. Now, if these nations, our so-called enemies as against our allies, are exposing how our government was usurped, they can blackmail us into any position. They can say, Richard Nixon, we want you to come to China. They can say, we want you not to bomb this area. They can put any terms they want on us. And we are a blackmailed nation. And we are living like blackmailed people. If we would only tell what everyone else in the world knows, they couldn't hold it over on us. But the public officials in power are not going to do that. It's up to the people. This is why we're on the air, to reach the people and make them realize that we are being blackmailed into foreign policies which make us embarrassed, make us a 10th-rate nation. Now, Mr. Buckley went on to say something else which was interesting. He talked about the decline of the British Empire, and he quoted Chu as saying this, he quotes Richard Nixon, in Kansas City, who said, in quotes, the decline of the British Empire has proved the inadequacy of parliamentary democracy. Then he went on to say, even Nixon recognized on July the 6th, 1971, in a press conference that 25 years ago, it would have been impossible even to imagine that U.S. prestige would have fallen as low as it is now. As he contemplates the 20 years since the end of World War II, the United States has suffered such loss of prestige throughout the world that even the president indicates his surprise. The origin of these problems, the lack of prestige, we know well. It is due to the attempt of the United States to dominate the world. Now, the United States, after World War II, set in an intelligence operation that ran our country, and they were ill-advised. They took a decision which was disastrous. We handed over the reins to Allen Dulles, the State Department, John Foster Dulles, and the CIA, the Dulles brothers, and Henry Luce, and these kind of people made the decision to arm against what they thought were the communists, and they depleted all the resources and the morality of the things that America had stood and died for. Now, these are broad sweeping statements, but I feel that William Buckley is the first writer to come out in 6 years and even repeat the story of what Chu Enlai is saying about America. We have other writers every day, Jack Anderson, Max Lerner, James Reston, Walter Lippmann, Mr. Kirkpatrick, Joseph Alsop, Harrison Salisbury. Every night they write and write and write. Every day they have articles in the paper. And not one of them has mentioned the Kennedy assassination. And if they do, they put down the conspiracy as a negative, or they ignore it as a cause for all the problems that they write articles every night about problems in the world today, and they never attribute them to the assassination of John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy or Martin Luther King. And I feel that it's time that they get to the subject. And Mr. Buckley's bringing it up last night, I think, is important, because the Buckleys are arch conservatives. I don't agree with their opinions. They're pretty self-centered. They make some broad sweeping statements I don't like. But I've never associated the Buckleys in all my research with any of the assassination teams. And I think the Buckleys would benefit politically. If we were to remove the top people in office that are there now, you'd probably, the only conservative left would be the two Buckleys. You know, of the top conservatives. And I think Mr. Buckley can be very sure of himself when he talks about the death of John Kennedy in his article, because he's not involved, at least not in my research. And he can, if you take the others and remove them from power, he stands there. Now, I brought the Sputnik, but I'm not going to read it today. The first issue, we've gone over the first issue really carefully. Another issue on what's happening in Dallas goes into Jim Garrison, and it's fascinating. And I should do a whole show on it. But Tom Wicker last night had an article on Nixon's musical chairs, and he's talking about putting Spiro Agnew in as a justice on the Supreme Court. You know, I have said before on these programs that Spiro Agnew should not be vice president of the United States. He passed because he didn't have to be scrutinized. The electoral process is such that if the man running for president says, I want this particular man, he gets in on a package deal. And that is terrible. Remember we talked about May's law, that we should have a law to change the process. And I wrote this to almost every member of Congress in 1970, that a thing like this shouldn't be allowed, because when you elect a justice of the Supreme Court, he has to be approved through committees. Where he's been, what his decisions are, is he fair? And I think that even to entertain the idea that Spiro Agnew be on the Supreme Court, considering his relationship with, again, the CIA and the FBI and the way he came to power, should be very carefully scrutinized in Washington. Now, a group in Texas, the Young American for Freedom, had a convention in Houston, and they decided that they would like to see Agnew be the president rather than Richard Nixon, because Richard Nixon has betrayed them in making overtures to China, and they gave several reasons why they were in favor of Spiro Agnew. Well, Mrs. Mitchell is back in the act again. She had an article in the paper yesterday backing the Young American for Freedom. Now, John Mitchell was campaign manager of Richard Nixon's campaign in 1968. But his wife, Martha, is backing the Young American for Freedom's group, who opposed Richard Nixon's reelection. And she is behind a package deal. Young American for Freedom is raising money, and they have a kit to send to men in the hospitals in Vietnam, the GIs. It would be toothpaste, aftershave, lotion, and Dominoes. But in the kit, along with that, would be literature from Human Events, a weekly newsletter published at Battleline, the American Conservative Union, New Guard, all this literature, William Buckley's National Review, criticizing Richard Nixon. They're to put this in the package with the toothpaste and the shaving lotion. And she is backing this particular group, Young Americans for Freedom. The publications have attacked the president's welfare plans, his trip to China, his wage price freeze. And Mrs. Mitchell sent out 250,000 letters last week in appreciation for Young American for Freedom's work. And she felt that they should have this literature, this far-right literature, in these packages sent to GIs supporting Spiro Agnew and attacking Richard Nixon, the man that her husband helped campaign. Now, John Mitchell and Spiro Agnew are very close. So I'm going to go right now, as much as we can in 1 hour, Gloria, to my research on Young American for Freedom. Because when the Warren Report came out, and I'm holding the Warren Report now, and if you have a pencil, take it down, the hardbound edition, page 292, goes into the investigation of the right-wing group in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to show that they had nothing to do with the assassination of John Kennedy. And that ends on 298. That's 6 pages of the Warren Report rule out the fact that there was a right-wing conspiracy in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. They go into the fact that Oswald did not know General Walker. They go into that literature that was published the day of the assassination in the newspaper. We talked on another show, a big newspaper ad saying, "Welcome, Mr. Kennedy, to Dallas," was published by the American Fact-Finding Committee in the Dallas newspaper the day of the assassination. It was signed by Chairman Bernard Weissman with a P.O. box. The commission went into an investigation of this origin of this ad, and I'll read you page 295. "The commission conducted a full investigation into the genesis of this advertisement and the background of those responsible for it. Three of the four men chiefly responsible, Bernard Weissman, William Burley, and Larry Schmidt, served in the U.S. Army in Munich, Germany in 1962. End the quote here. I'm interposing. They do not mention the name Larry Jones at all. There's four men. They mention three of them. The Warren Report goes on. Quotes. This is page 295. Schmidt was the first to leave the service. He settled in Dallas in October 62, became a life insurance salesman, quickly engaged in political activities in pursuit of their objectives they had in Munich. He was affiliated with several organizations and various political writings. Upon their release from the military, Weissman and Burley did not immediately move to Dallas, though they were urged to do so by Schmidt. On October the 1st, 1963, Schmidt wrote Weissman, "L.A. Stevenson is scheduled here on the 24th. Kennedy is scheduled on the November 24th. One was to be November, one October. There are to be protests. All these big things are happening now, and if we don't get in right now, we may as well forget it." This is what he wrote to Bernard Weissman. 5 days later, he wrote to Weissman and Burley in New York City and told them to come to Dallas, that their organization that they set up in Munich, Germany, is going, and we want you to come right now. Within 10 days, Bernard Weissman and Bill Burley arrived in Dallas, and the four men made plans regarding President Kennedy's planned visit to Dallas. Weissman's name was used on the ad to counter charges of anti-Semitism, which were leveled against the conservative groups, and they said it was a fictitious committee that was set up. Now, the commission said they found no evidence of connecting those responsible for the handbill with Lee Harvey Oswald or the assassination. Now, I'm closing the Warren Report, and I'm suggesting if you have a pencil, go to your library and look up Look Magazine, dated January 26, 1965. This is 2 years after the assassination of John Kennedy. The article is called "A Plot That Flopped" by Patricia Swank. And I say that the plot didn't flop. These men do control America, will control the world. And I want you to tell me why the article says their plot flopped. I will read it to you. It begins, I'm reading a few excerpts from Look Magazine, 1965. "The Warren Report merely mentioned that Larry Schmidt arrived from Germany, from Munich, in the fall of 62, and later Bernard Weissman and Bill Burley arrived in Dallas. But Oswald didn't know them, and they put an ad in the paper." Look Magazine says the following, quotes, "At Munich, Germany, in June 1962, a tense young non-com typed out a 6-page timetable for his plot to take control of politics in his homeland. He was Larry Schmidt, a fourth-class specialist in the U.S. Army. He trained a small, disciplined band of soldier conspirators to follow him stateside, and he hoped, he said, to do whatever was necessary to accomplish his goals. Schmidt's weapon was an organization called CUSA, C-U-S-A. The code of it was conservatism USA, a secret organization put together under the nose of the military security police. He signed up four zealots inside the military police and counterintelligence corps. His agents, in constant training for their mission, used Army machinery for their own ends. When a corporal for the U.S. Army headquarters beat up a CUSA man, Schmidt claims the long army of CUSA influence reached up to Heidelberg, got him busted, and shipped out. So the Munich timetable bristled with conspiratorial evidence. They set up secret conversations, U.S. headquarters in Dallas. They were to infiltrate the right-wing organizations, non-political groups like the JCs, and take over. They had a business deal called AMBUS that was to AMBUS for American Business that would raise money for CUSA, the organization, the secret organization. Their goal was by January 1969 to have a conservative president sitting in the White House. Then Congress would be ruled by conservatives and our job would be done. What happens at that time, we're not thinking about, but we'll all be in control. Schmidt arrived in Dallas on schedule. He went right to work for the National Indignation Convention. Now, there's a National Indignation Committee whose headquarters were on Commerce Street, just a few blocks from Ruby, Jack Ruby. These men had foreknowledge of the assassination. They had weapons. They stockpiled weapons for the Minutemen, the National Indignation Committee. This is called the National Indignation Convention. They switched their work to the Young Americans for Freedom. They were still going strong the day that John Kennedy was shot. They had put the notice in the newspaper about Welcome, Mr. Kennedy. Look Magazine mentioned it. But Schmidt said the Stevenson incident launched him into politics. Still, the furor over the ad, over the day that Kennedy was killed, it had the black border on, they thought about death. But Schmidt went on in 1965 and said he thought that increased in influence and widened his power base. He got a job with a Dallas ad agency that handles conservative political campaigns, works there as a paid worker. He did a very fine job until the Warren Commission uncovered part of the CUSA plot. Now, the Warren Commission didn't even go into the CUSA plot. They published letters that I'm going to read on the air that have never been read on the air of these men that were marked secret or destroyed. The FBI did procure some of these, but it didn't do a thing to stop the men's power. Now, Larry Schmidt said, he says it's a shame that a lot of people, goes on to say, his drive for zeal and power are not inhibited by the restraints many of us take for granted. We expected a showdown between communists and Nazis on the one hand and CUSA on the other. He says, don't misunderstand me. I'm no Oswald or Ruby, and I'd never harm anyone. I'm a sane, rational, patriotic, law-abiding citizen, Larry Schmidt said about himself in 1965. Don't understand me. I'm sane, rational, patriotic, law-abiding. End quotes. I'm going back into the testimony when Jack Ruby was interviewed by the Warren Commission and took a polygraph test. Volume 14, page 557. Arlene Specter of the commission staff, a lawyer, said, Mr. Tannehill, do you have any other questions you would like to have asked? Joe Tannehill is a wealthy lawyer in the Southwest who was with Ruby all the time, who was in on the polygraph test. And Tannehill said, I think it has been very, very comprehensive. Jack protested about the ad that was insulting President Kennedy. He protested because he's a 100 patriotic American citizen, and he is still telling the truth. And he's talking about the name on the box that upset him, the Bernard Weissman in that ad that day. And he wanted to do something about that ad because Ruby is a 100% patriotic American citizen and he would be telling the truth. So Alexander, the police chief in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, said to Ruby, are you a police character? And this is for the polygraph test, and Ruby said no. So John Tannehill said, are you a 100% patriotic American citizen? And Alexander, the district attorney, said, are you a law-abiding citizen? And Ruby said, yes. And Tannehill said, are you a 100% American patriotic citizen? And Ruby said, yes. And he passed the polygraph test. So this is volume 14, page 567. The district attorney in Dallas and the wealthy oilman lawyer are saying to Ruby, are you a law-abiding patriotic American citizen? And he says, yes. So if Ruby can say it under polygraph test and pass the test after everyone seeing him shoot in the police department, a man who was handcuffed, Then Larry Schmidt in 1965 is saying the same words, don't understand me. He said, I'm a sane, rational, patriotic, law-abiding citizen, meaning that they know full well what they're doing. Now back to the Look magazine, before we get to the documents and letters of Larry Schmidt. There was an article on what are his motives to try to take control of the government by 1969 or 72. Larry Schmidt said he had no reason to trust the world. He was born at the age, when he was born, he lived with no mother or father. At the age 9, he learned that mom and dad were an aunt and uncle and were getting a divorce. He went from grandparents' home to unmarried uncles and moves around. And he said, I was restless, bright, and wanted an identity of my own, so I joined the Army. And he went on tour in Germany. And he got out of the Army and went to the University of Miami, had a bad love affair, went to California, couldn't continue his education, his mind was disturbed. So he went back into the Army because the Army is a wonderful home for people who have no place, they have latent hostility and no place to go. So he went back to the Army and he said, I am ready to remake myself. If need be, I'll remake the world. If he could not fit into society, he would make society fit him. He became public relations director of the U.S. Armed Forces Recreation Center in Munich. And he sat in the beer halls in Munich and he bundled with elements that were into a philosophy of revolt. Then, he said, came the absolute crusher, the 1961 Bay of Pigs fiasco. And he saw the Bay of Pigs and Kennedy mixed up with this. He said, I was so disgusted with our government and so humiliated. His German friends teased him. His German girlfriends ridiculed him. And they said to him, if you don't like the damn world, why don't you change it? And I said, my God, that's not a bad idea. And that's when he started CUSA, his organization. He decided then, so he lined up recruits. He lined up Larry Jones, a decoder, a muscular North Carolina extrovert. He took him as his personal bodyguard and chief of security. He got Norman Baker, a company clerk in the military police, who saw the need for money to pay politics. And they dreamed up ambush, and Baker recruited Bernard Weissman, the one Jew in the circle. They had 5 inner circle and 10 outer circle, and they became a visible group known as the Klan. They had influence for other GIs. They fixed passes. They made loans. They got interest. Schmidt, the press agent, ingratiated himself with the publicity-minded commanders and the visiting VRPs, and he would speak at the time of big summit meetings. And he would talk later in 1965 about a summit meeting in April of 1st, 1965, of his group and the takeover of rightist organizations in America. And he would destroy anybody who would not join. Now, Look magazine said, we are 5 young men, ambitious, hungry, plotting lives away to change the world. I'm a man of action. I think like a man of action, and I act like a man of thought. Okay, Look magazine went on. Where did he strike first? He settled in Dallas. He got a job with the United Press. He went on to see a conservative by reputation, Dr. Robert Morris. He worked with him. He put his CUSA activities that they planned in Munich, Germany, at these secret meetings with high-up military police, into Young American for Freedom. His brother, Bob, moved into Dallas, where he was a full-time paid worker for General Walker. Let me end quotes here. Brother Bob was never called as a witness, is not indexed, is never mentioned. His brother Bob, he writes, is a full-time worker for General Walker. Larry Jones came back from Munich with him. Schmidt tried to activate the business by promoting private clubs, nightclubs. Now, this is what Look magazine telling you. I'm going to go into the Warren Commission exhibits, not the witness testimony. None of these men were called as witnesses before the commission. Schmidt's name came to notice at the time that he led 14 student pickets to protest a speech by UN Ambassador Adlai Stevenson. Let me end quotes from volume 18 to say why we have conspiracy to cross state lines or for students coming in and stirring up trouble. Nobody has mentioned that Larry Schmidt, who originated the attack on Adlai Stevenson in Texas, was not a student. He was in the Army. He got out of the Army, went back in the Army. And he is the instigator of the riot, and they tried to blame the students at Texas. He was the man who instigated and took the publicity. Look magazine goes on to say that he called Bernie Weissman and told him and Bull Burley to come out and to Dallas. It's time to come out, that everything they planned in Germany would come to head in Dallas. Now, it says Burley and Weissman arrived early November John Bircher, Joe Grinnan raised $1,463 for the ad that was placed against John Kennedy. The ad was paid by three members of the Birch Society, Edgar Crissy, H.R. Bright, Nelson Bunker Hunt, the son of H.L. Hunt. Schmidt was driving with Grinnan, member of the Birch Society, when the assassination news came over. Schmidt's chapter of the Birch Society and CUSA suddenly had few members in town. Now, Look magazine is telling you that after they thought there'd be a witch hunt for these men after the assassination of John Kennedy, and they had few members in town. They had no members in town except one, and I'll go into him in a minute.
You're listening to Dialogue Assassination with Mae Bressel. This is KLRB Stereo FM, Carmel by the Sea.
Okay.